so glad to see you as we worship together today. I want to say a special word of welcome to everybody watching online, everybody at Pacala campus, and everybody in Bishopville. Kim was a young girl, about 12 years old, who grew up in the Philippines. She and her family were very close to a guy in their village named AJ. AJ had some connections in Manila, and he was going to go and move there. And he made a suggestion to this family that he was very close to, that Kim go with him and go to Manila where she could have an opportunity for a better education, a better future. And the family trusted AJ tremendously. And so they agreed, and Kim went with AJ to Manila. And, of course, when they got to Manila, it was what AJ had described. Kim did go to a better school. And she did have an awareness of a bigger world. She was living a better life. But after a few months in Manila, AJ one day asked Kim if he could take a picture of her with her not wearing any clothes. And that was just the first of many pictures. And the pictures got more sexual and suggestive. AJ began to sexually abuse Kim. Pictures of her were distributed around the world on the internet to other pedophiles and sexual predators. And AJ didn't stop there. He began to rent Kim out for the night to other people who had that same deviancy. You hear a story like that, and you almost want to say, well, why didn't she run away? Why did she stay there? Why didn't she do something? In Kim's own words, she said, "It was like he had a total grasp on me. It was so difficult to break away." Kim felt helpless. Now, maybe you think that this only occurs overseas, that situations like this could never occur in our world. I sat down with a woman once, and she was telling me about her marriage, how abusive it was. Her husband abused her physically, abused her emotionally. And she talked about how he had total control. He controlled the money. He controlled her movements. He had put a GPS tracker on her car, and she was not able to go anywhere without him knowing about it. And if she was 3 minutes late returning, he would accuse her of having an affair and once again would begin to beat her. And I asked, why don't you leave? And she said, I just feel helpless. Men have a hard time admitting that we are helpless. Especially in North America, we believe that, you know, we are strong and we are able and we can meet and solve any problem. And yet I have known men, I bet you do too, who swear they are never going to get that drunk again, or who swear they're never going back to that website. And one night when everybody's in bed, the rationalizations begin to take hold again and surface in their minds. And before they know it, they've gone through a case of beer. Or before they know it, they're trying to clear their web browser history. Every addict I've ever known has said the same thing. I feel helpless. It's so easy to blame helpless people and say, well, you should have made a different choice. You should have responded differently. You shouldn't have done it that way. But of course, the reality is most of us, there's a time coming in our life when we will feel helpless as well. So we're in this message series entitled, Who Matters? We're in a time in the life of our country where people are asking, Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter. At Alice Drive, we believe people matter to God. And so we've been going through the Gospel of Luke. Luke, who was a physician who carefully investigated the story of Jesus. We've been looking at the people that Jesus says matters. First week, we talked about how ordinary people matter to Jesus. Last week, we talked about how outsiders matter to Jesus. And today, we're going to talk about helpless people. And we're going to hear a story about a helpless woman and how she mattered to Jesus. So if you have a Bible, turn to Luke chapter 7. Luke chapter 7. This story picks up right where we left off last week in verse 11. Jesus has finished the Sermon on the Mount, or what Luke calls the Sermon on the Plain. And he has gone back to Capernaum. That's where he heals the centurion's servant. And now he's going around the northwest edge of the Sea of Galilee, Lake Gennesaret. And he comes to a village named Nain. This is where we pick up the story. Soon afterwards, Jesus went to a town called Nain. And his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. This is the collision of two crowds. The first crowd is the crowd following Jesus. Two kinds of people in this crowd. The first are disciples, people who are intentionally trying to become like Jesus. The second group of people are people who are spiritually curious. They want to know, who is Jesus? What's his next great miracle? What's his next great teaching? And when they get to the city gate, the entrance to the city, they collide with this other crowd, which is a funeral procession. A little background on funeral customs in Palestine in the first century. Palestine is a very warm environment. Bodies decayed quickly. So if a person died, first thing, of course, the family would do, they would grieve and wail, and then they would send for professional mourners. These would be part-time people that you brought into your home. They would cry with you. They would help you prepare the body for burial. Burial would happen that same day. You would wash the body, put spices on it if you could afford them, wrap it in a burial cloth if you could afford it. If you can't afford it, you would dress them in clean clothes. You would put them on a stretcher, which is called in this passage a bier, B-I-E-R, not B-E-E-R. Different. And then you would get pallbearers. They would lift up this stretcher and they would process through town. And as a procession began to go through town, there would be mournful music playing off the lyre and on the harp and the flute. And people would say, well, what's going on? Who died? Everybody knew that it was a sign of death. And apparently this young man, probably between 12 and 20, was well known in the village. His mother was well known. And there's a large group of people who come out to mourn his passing. Because what his passing means is not just the end of his life. It means his mother is now helpless. See, when the crowds collide, Luke tells us that she's a widow. A woman without a male relative in that culture had no legal standing. She had to rely either on her husband, her father, or her son to appear in court for her, to give testimony. Without a son, and she's widowed, there's nobody there to do the legal work that has to be done. And just think about this. There's no one there to help her settle her estate. Her estate was probably being held in trust for her son as he was coming of age. Now, there's no one. And there were always people who would hire out to become a spokesperson for a widow, and they would take advantage of the widow. Aren't you glad we live in a time where people don't take advantage of widows anymore? Too soon? There's more going on than just this woman being legally helpless. Her future's been cut off. Who's going to take care of her in her old age? I read this week a story about a woman. She and her husband were not able to have children. She wanted to adopt an orphan from overseas. Her husband refused. He said he didn't want any foreigners in his house. And then her husband died in his early 50s. And as she moved into her 60s, she said, I really miss having a daughter to lean on in this last chapter of my life. It's easy to judge helpless people. It's easy to say you should have made a different decision. You should have seen this coming. What's wrong with you? Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. But here's what I know about every one of you. There's going to be a moment where you feel helpless. Maybe when you need to see a doctor and you call and you're told the next appointment is in 2021. Maybe when you have cancer and you've done chemo and you've done radiation and the doctors say, we've done all we can do. Feel helpless. Maybe it is when one of your adult children is making a bad decision and you know it and you see them headed for the edge of the cliff and you want to say, don't do it, and you say, don't do it, and guess what they do? They do it. Go right over that cliff. And you're helpless. You can't live their life for them. Maybe it's something you've done to yourself. It happens. Maybe you made poor financial decisions, poor financial choices. Who among us hasn't made a bad financial decision? Don't raise your hands. And then you dig yourself in such a deep hole, you think, there's no way out. And you get depressed, you get anxious, you wonder, how in the world am I going to make it? Sometimes you feel helpless, not because of anything you've done, but because of what has been done to you. Maybe you were abused as a child. Maybe you lost a parent, never got that nurture, that blessing that you needed. I think right now all of us feel a little helpless, don't we? Don't you feel a little helpless around this pandemic? Don't you wish you could just stop it? Just stop it? Of course, none of us can by ourselves. Don't you just wish in this time of racial unrest we could just say, stop. Just let people be people. Don't you wish you could say that? Don't you wish we really could just be in this next election, one nation under God, and that be enough? See, the greatest danger in being helpless is losing hope. The greatest danger in being helpless is when you lose hope and you feel like this is all there is. This is one of the reasons people commit suicide. Because they feel like there's no hope. It's one of the reasons people sink into depression. This is one of the reasons why people give up, because they take one step forward and they get knocked back three steps. So whenever you feel helpless, I want you to remember what Jesus does for this widow. In verse 13, when the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, don't cry. Then he went up and touched the bier they were carrying him on, and the bearer stood still. He said, young man, I say to you, get up. The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. So what does Jesus do for this helpless widow? The first thing Jesus does is he has compassion. His heart is moved. Psychologists call this being emotionally available. Guys, whenever your wife says, I just want you to listen, not fix my problem, she's asking you to be emotionally available. I see several of you looking at the men in your life. And Jesus does this. Jesus actually lets himself feel what this woman must feel. He is moved. And Jesus still does this. This is one of the reasons you should pray your emotions. When you are angry, tell Jesus you're angry. Jesus may be angry with you. Jesus may also say, really? Is that worth being angry about? When you feel anxious, Jesus will understand your anxiety. He will bring you peace. When you feel depressed, talk to Jesus about it. Whenever you are helpless, bring your emotions to Jesus. There's an old song. Some of you won't remember it. It goes like this. Now let us have a little talk with Jesus. Let us tell him all about our trouble. He will hear our faintest cry, and he will answer by and by. you need to have a little talk with Jesus. You need to tell him all about your troubles. And know that he is listening. He hears you. He cares about what you're feeling. And then right after this, Jesus tells the woman something unusual. He says, don't cry. And that's exactly opposite of what we think Jesus should do, isn't it? I mean, in our culture, we do say, you need to cry out your feelings. You need to let your feelings get processed. So Jesus must have a very good reason to tell this woman, don't cry. And by the way, never tell someone, don't cry, unless you have a good reason that they should not cry. And by the way, telling them if they don't stop crying, you'll give them something to cry about is not a good reason. What's going on here? Jesus sees the big picture. He knows what he's about to do. He knows that he is about to change this woman's world. So pray your emotions, but remember to put them in the bigger picture of what God is going to do. Because let me tell you what happens with emotions. Sometimes emotions create a picture of reality, a version of reality that isn't real. It's not what's really going on, but it feels real. It feels like this is it. And Jesus says, whoa. Let's take a moment. Let's get the bigger picture. Yesterday, I was cutting grass, and my lawnmower caught a rock and sent it hurling into a storm door that had a full piece of glass. And the glass shattered. And when I saw that, my first reaction was not, blessed be the name of the Lord. I was mad. I was like, I can't believe this. That is not speaking in tongues. It's just so angry that this happened. I was furious. I'm thinking, well, this is turning out to just be a... You can feel like it's just a really sucky day, right? And it can ruin your whole outlook. Is that real? So what happened to me yesterday was this, after I kind of... I could feel the Holy Spirit nudge me and say, wait a minute, Clay. Nobody's dead. There's no blood. Yeah. You're still here. I still love you. See the big picture. One of the most important things you can ask God is to let him let you see the big picture. Because here's a truth you need to hold on to. When you feel helpless, you remember that God already has a solution to your problem. When you feel helpless, you need to remember God already has a solution to your problem. He's at work on your behalf. You remember the story of Kim that I just told you? Well, one evening in Manila, AJ took Kim to a hotel to meet a client. And when they opened the door of the hotel room, there was not a client. There was law enforcement and social workers from the International Justice Mission. AJ was arrested. He was convicted. He was put in prison. Kim was taken to a shelter, a home for young girls who had been sexually trafficked, sponsored by the International Justice Mission. There she found that there were other girls just like her, and she found out that her life didn't have to be defined by her abuse. She was offered help and hope and healing. God already was working a solution to her problem, to her helplessness. That's part of what God's people are supposed to do. We are supposed to be working for justice because often we are the answer to someone's helplessness. Whatever you're dealing with, I wish I could sit down. I wish we could talk. I wish you could tell me in detail what your problem is. But here's what I know. When you follow Jesus, when you are walking with Him, taking next steps toward Him, God is already working a solution to your problem. Sometimes you get those solutions here on earth. Sometimes those solutions wait for you in heaven. But there is a solution to every problem you face. So Jesus touches the stretcher. The pallbearers stop. Now we don't really see this as a big thing, but in the Jewish culture this was huge. You see, if you touched a dead person, or if you touched what a dead person touched, like the stretcher, you were ritually unclean by Jewish law for 7 days. You couldn't be with your family, you couldn't go to synagogue, you were not allowed to touch anything else. That was a man-made law. Isn't it interesting how people make these laws, these rules, and say, you've got to follow these rules. You feel helpless, you've got to follow the rules. If you do what I do, you wind up spending time with people in crisis, oftentimes people who've lost someone that they love. And there's always a well-meaning friend who tries to tell them, this is what you have to do to grieve. They will say things like, now go ahead and cry. I don't need to cry. Well, you need to cry. It's not written in the Bible that you need to cry. Because everybody's grief journey is different. You will have your own time. You will have your own moments. Jesus never lets the rules get in the way of His helping. He was willing to break the rules and heal on the Sabbath. He was willing to say, I don't care about all these ritual instructions about staying clean. I want to help people. When you are helpless, don't be surprised if God sends a solution to your problem in a way that breaks the rules. Maybe even the rules you made for yourself. So I talked to you about a woman in an abusive marriage. I said to her, what about your family? What about your parents? I knew both her parents were living. I said, have you talked to them about it? And she said, oh no, I couldn't. I couldn't tell them about this. It would break their hearts. They think he hung the moon. And as I listened to her, I thought about how she had built her own box. That she had made some rules. And she felt like she couldn't break them. And I urged her, I said, I think you need to talk to your parents. I think that you may be surprised. The next time I saw her, she was lighter. Her countenance was brighter. I said, so what's going on? She said, I thought about what you said, and I broke down and I told my parents. And when I told them, they began to cry. And they said, we knew something was wrong, but we didn't know what it was. And so they gave me some money. Then when we went, my dad went and he moved my stuff out of the house when my husband was gone. And now I'm with my parents. My husband is causing all kinds of trouble. But my parents are on my side. Don't be surprised if God's solution to your problem breaks all the rules that you think you have to live in. Now, the next part is amazing. And it's really funny if you think about it. Jesus speaks to the dead man. This is not normal behavior. I know some of you go to the cemetery and some of you will talk to loved ones there. And I get that. I've done that. Totally understandable. I've been in funeral homes many times, but I've never seen anybody go down to the casket and say, hey, quit sleeping, get up. Because that's crazy. Dead people stay. I see some of you don't know this. Dead people stay dead, don't they? Except Jesus goes up to this young boy and he says, I tell you, get up. And the boy sits up. I would have loved to have seen the expressions on the face of the crowd. I mean, they've got to be going. And then the boy starts to talk. And I wish Luke would have told us what he said. Because it had to be hilarious. What did he say? Did he say, whew, that was a long nap. did he say, you know, when I went to sleep, I felt dead. But I feel pretty good now. I want to know what he said. Here's what I want you to know. Jesus has authority over death. Now, what does that mean? Something very significant for you and me. What it means is that about 2.5 years from the time this occurs, death is going to capture Jesus when he dies for your sins and my sins. But on a Sunday morning, Jesus is going to come awake. He's going to pull off the cloths that he has been wrapped in, swing his feet over the rock ledge, walk out of a tomb where the stone has been rolled away, and he's going to say, "Death cannot hold me. I have power over death." And if Jesus has power over death, what in your life is bigger than that? See, we miss this. We miss this. Some of you sitting here this morning say, you know, I'm really kind of in a mess and I need a whole character change. Yes, you do. Jesus can give it to you. Some of you are in the grip of addiction. Jesus can break the power of your addiction. Some of you today, you are in a moment where you feel like this relationship is toxic. I don't know what I'm going to do. Jesus can give you power to find a new path. I want you to know Jesus' authority over death means you are not helpless. Resurrection means we're not helpless in the face of death or any other power that will separate us from the love of Christ. I pray for each of you to live in the confidence of that power every day. If you're sick, if you're dying, I want you to remember, if you follow Jesus, death does not have the last word over you. And Jesus does this very tender thing. He gives this son back to his mother. That's what Jesus does. Jesus always takes what is dead and gives back hope. Whatever you feel is dead in your life, Jesus says, I can touch that. I can make that living. And in that moment, that widow's life changes. Now she's got legal standing. Now she's got someone to fight for her. Now she has someone to take care of her in her old age. That widow's life is changed. She's not helpless anymore. So whenever you feel helpless and you don't know what to pray, pray for hope. Pray for God to just pour hope all over your life. Pray for God to fill you with hope, to see the bigger picture, to feel His power. Pray for hope. I don't know about you, but I'm praying for hope these days. I'm praying for hope that this pandemic will end. Praying for hope that racism will crumble. Praying for hope that we will be one nation under God. Praying for hope for people I love who are worried about their health. Praying for my own life and my own future for hope. I hope you pray for hope with me. And how does the crowd react to all of this? Well, Luke tells us. And sometimes you read verses like this and you kind of just pass over them. But don't go too fast. There's real important things here. Verse 16, they were all filled with awe and praised God. A great prophet has appeared among us, they said. God has come to help his people. This news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country. It's real interesting because it's easy to miss. We started the story with how many crowds? Two. But we end the story with how many crowds? One. They were all amazed. They were all glorifying God. What does it mean to glorify God? The word glorify means to give weight to something. We would put it this way. They all took God seriously in that moment. Wouldn't you? I mean, you see a funeral procession and all of a sudden they stop the hearse and a guy climbs out of the back. What would you do? Maybe our word would be freak out in Jesus' name. I wonder. I wonder how many of us are helpless because we're not taking God seriously. We just treat Him as an add-on into our life. In this moment, they were able to put two and two together and say, oh my gosh, God has sent a great prophet. Now, can you do that? Can you put two and two together? See, when you study the Bible seriously, one of the things you should do is always look up these names of places and find out where they are. Because about 5 miles away from the village of Nan is another village called Shuman. And 800 years before this, there was a mom who had a young son, and the young son died, and she sent for the prophet Elisha, and Elisha came and raised that boy back to life. Now these people didn't move around a lot, right? They knew that story. Don't you know every time that they went through the village of Shuman, they always said, hey, yeah, this is where Elisha did that big thing. And all of a sudden, they begin to realize, hey, God has done it again. He has sent a great prophet. There is something at work here that only God can do. Can you put two and two together like they did? Maybe you need to ask Jesus today to show you where He's at work. I want to teach you a very useful prayer. It goes like this. Lord, show me where You're at work so I can take my next step toward You. Lord, show me where You're at work so I can take my next step toward You. And the last thing this crowd says, they're all murmuring back and forth to one another. And again, I love the level of detail. This is how you know the Bible is not a bunch of made-up stories. The detail. Luke says they all said, God has come to help His people. And that actually isn't a very good translation because it doesn't translate well unless you grew up in the South. Because it literally means God visits His people. I come from porch people. Do you know about porch people? See, when I was growing up, we didn't have air conditioning. So you went out on the porch. Now, I was just a little boy. But I remember we would sit in rocking chairs out on the porch. We'd shell peas. I know some of you think peas come in a can. No, they come in a shell. You got to shell them. How many of you ever shell peas? The rest of you are missing out on life's great experiences. We would take pears or guavas and we'd peel them. And my Aunt Nita would make preserves. And you got to love the way my Aunt Nita made preserves. It was one part pear, five parts sugar. And the old people would talk back and forth. And somebody would ride by and they'd pull in the yard and they'd get out and they'd come and get in the rocking chair and they'd just visit for a while. And the adults, they would just talk back and forth and they would share their troubles and they would listen. And sometimes whoever stopped by would say, well, you know, I hear your tractor's not working. I've got a tractor you can borrow. You need help moving that piece of furniture? Well, I can come by tomorrow with my man and we'll move it. You just need somebody to talk to? Well, I'm here. Let's just talk. That's what I get a picture of Jesus doing. He just comes and He sits on the front porch of our souls. He says, let's have a little talk. Tell me all about your trouble. I'm going to answer you by and by. When you feel that little prayer wheel turning, little fire burning, I want you to remember just a little talk with me will make it right.
Thanks for joining us for this service from Alice Drive Baptist Church. Alice Drive is one church with two locations. We have a location at the corner of Wise Drive and Loring Mill Road in Sumter. That location has services at 8:30 on Sunday morning, which is a traditional service, two contemporary services, one at 9:45 and one at 11, and then a service on Monday night for people who can't make it on Sunday, and that service is at 7 o'clock. We also have a location called Pocala Church. It meets in Pocala Springs Elementary School on Bethel Church Road in Sumter. That location has two services at 9:45 and 11. I hope we will see you in person very soon. I'm Clay Smith, the lead pastor at Alice Drive Baptist Church in Sumter. Check us out at alicedrive.org. God bless you. Hope to see you soon.